It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany,
UK,
America.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running. It is the last Monday of August 2022. Summer. Well, summer has less than a month left in it. And then comes the time. Well, you know the time. Darlene in Connecticut and I have talked about it and agreed over it many an evening. The time known as the great dying of things, otherwise known as autumn. Yeah, that'll come along about the third week of September, and yeah. And everybody gets all misty-eyed about autumn. Oh, autumn's so beautiful. I love the fall. The colors are because everything's dying, at least in the northern hemisphere. Happy impending spring to our antipodean friends. I just love using the word antipodean. It makes me feel like a smart girl. Hi, I'm Robin. It is Moran Monday on the horn. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, for letting me know that the packets are passing and the streams are streaming. There are no Ukro-Nazis in our stream this afternoon because Brother Deacon Asa chases them all away. And so I'm looking forward to a magnificent broadcast experience this evening. Being as it's Moran Monday, we will have plenty of right-wing Morans to take note of, if not, well, you don't celebrate Moranity now, do you? No, but I'm getting ahead of myself because, well, every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is, of course, no different, so we say thank you as the drum loop ends. We say thank you to our 29th, 28th, and 27th day of the month subscribers via PayPal. And what that means is we say thank you to Sharon. Thank you, Sharon. And thank you to Charlene in Rogues Island. And thank you to Suman. Thank you as well to our buddy Robert in Australia. Thank you to our dear sister Jude. That was Friday. And so, thanks one and all for being partial sponsors of the program. Of course, on the last broadcast day, we will do our thank yous to our Patreon subscribers. Thank you, name by name by name. And what that means is we are $2,100 in the hole. $2,100. So, that's, you know, that's rough, and that's frightening, and it would be lovely if we could knock that out in these 3 days and not start September with a ginormous hole to dig out of. We'll see what happens. If you'd like to help out, the PayPal button is over at headon.live, and you just click it, and if you'd like to become a $10 a month subscriber, that is putting putting forward the cost of less than a half a stick of chewing gum per program, you could do so via PayPal or Patreon. That having been said, let's see if we can maybe knock some of this down. It would be a community-made blessing and in fact a community made miracle if we ended August fully funded. Okay, so that part is taken care of, and like I said, it's more in Monday. And I don't know how you feel about this, but we'll find out. When it comes to more ends, you know, oh my Jesus, this is just wow. I saw this earlier, and Lord, we begin more in Monday. And before I jump into all of that, a program note, if you please. Beginning tomorrow evening, followed by Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Monday, Labor Day, I'll be subbing for Malloy around the Truth Seeker campfire. It is a grand and glorious time as Mike takes Molly off to college. She got into a great school, and so she is beginning her college journey, and far, far from the low foothills of the North Georgia mountains, and I wish her only the absolute best. She is a fantastic and talented and incredibly intelligent young woman, and I have nothing but every bit of faith in the world that she will go and kick ass and take names. Knock them out, Molly, and safe travels for you and for your dad. And we'll try to hold down the fort in Mike's absence. So, again, that's Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Monday. This, of course, upcoming weekend is Labor Day weekend, the official kickoff to general election season, so there will be a lot of politicking as we move toward and through Labor Day, which will provide a great deal of fodder, if you will, for our discussions. And so, that having been said, yes, I think it's time we, oh my God, what a moron. Yeah.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up. You will not believe your ears. It's More Ann Monday on the horn. Yes, indeed, right here behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas, mere steps away from the Carnival Midway. We can't afford the actual Midway space. That's a lot more expensive. So we operate off Midway. And behind these thin cybernetic veil of canvas, we've got More Anns. Oh, we've got every kind of More Ann under the sun. We've got birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, birchers, booger eaters, baggers. Golly, that goes a long way back now. That's over a decade old, being a bagger. But we've got them. We got maggots. We got trumpanzees. We got Republicans. We got libertarians. Now they're all here, the grasping, groping, grabby, gross. Yeah, they're all right here for your appreciation, or disgust, or revulsion. Just a mere few steps away from where only a short time ago you were throwing dollar after dollar after dollar to get three ping pong balls, which you threw, tossed, pitched in a dire and desperate hope of getting one to go into a fishbowl so that you could take home with you a precious little baby iguana. You are surprisingly iguana-free for some reason or another. But anyway, as you enter the Moran Monday tent, please do be cognizant of and careful, and keep a close eye on rings, bracelets, wristwatches, pocket watches, necklace watches, necklaces, brooches, bracelets, piercing jewelry, purses, backpacks, small children. Hell, they'd even take the iguana if you won one, and European-style messenger bags, because, in fact, the Morans can get grabby. Head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans, and you will, especially on a day like this. Oh, my goodness gracious sakes alive. We begin with, of course, I say of course, I mean, it didn't have to be this way, no, but somebody booked her on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, and consequently, we begin with Lauren Bobblehead Boobert. That's right, Clanny Oakley. Who is apparently upset. She's grunting and groaning and barking that way, at least. About, of course, student loan forgiveness. Not that she has to worry about getting any student loans forgiven. No, not Clanny Oakley. No, she's never been anywhere near a college, to the best of my knowledge. But nonetheless, she's upset about student loan forgiveness. A paltry $10,000 for people who borrowed privately, up to $20,000 for people who had Pell Grants that have to be repaid. And she does think she's terribly clever. Hint, she isn't. But she also, being a Moran, never misses an opportunity to attack marginalized communities. Mm-hmm. On the aforementioned Fox News TV Radio Rwanda yesterday, she declared, let's see what set her off. By the way, if you want a really good giggle, over on Reddit, there's a subreddit called Dark Brandon. It is a celebration of the badassery of President Biden, and I've been giggling all weekend long. In announcing the student loan forgiveness, President Biden, of course, said, education is a ticket to a better life. That ticket has become too expensive for many Americans. The burden is so heavy that even if you graduate, you might not have the ticket that graduating college once offered. All of which are true statements. Absolutely factual. And in response, Lauren Bobblehead Boobert declared that President Biden was, quote, get the hockey puck. I mean, I think the hockey puck should be kind of de rigueur with anything involving Lauren Bobblehead Boobert, Clanny Oakley, but I issue the warning just the same. Oh, by the way, if you'd like to be part of the Merry Madcap Wackies, any real-time multimedia Madcap extravaganza, that's the Horn chat room, pop on by, headon.live, click on chat room. You'll be greeted by early arrivers, Anatole and Squeaky, and capably moderated by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, where a good time is being had by all. But anyway, a woman who supports a guy who stole classified documents from the people of the United States, I'm talking about Clanny Oakley, said that Joe Biden was, and this is a quote, robbing hardworking Americans to pay for Karen's daughter's degree in lesbian dance theory. do tell, where do they teach this lesbian dance theory? For perhaps there is a I don't know, maybe there's a pass-fail I could audit, and maybe, you know, adult continuing education or something. It sounds like a pretty fascinating line of study, but lesbian dance theory. Theoretical dance. A dance to architecture. A dance to landscaping. A dance to 3 weeks left in summer. And lesbianing at the same time. Oh my goodness, she's such a card. And Emery and Marveline sitting there matching Barca loungers in the trailer down at the Ballerina Swan Lake trailer park and country club. And I tell you what, she's a pretty one, ain't she? Ain't she, Marveline? I mean, I tell you, I remember when we was young and you was pretty like Lauren is now. And I just, shut up, Emery. Take your medicine. Get your hands where I can see them. Oops. I hope that isn't perceived as some sort of sexual snark. But no, she not only said that. She said she was mad about the fact that Joe Biden, Dark Brandon, God, I love it, called out the MAGAs, the maggots, and called them semi-fascists. And well, they'll be, you know, eventually they'll catch up with the rest of us and just start calling them maggots. Make America, you know, make America great again. Trump supporters, I mean, that's what they call themselves. Just go ahead, because, well, they are. And we'll celebrate on that day. They finally caught up with us. And yeah, because you'll recall that President Biden said, the MAGA Republicans don't just threaten our personal rights and economic security. They're a threat to our very democracy. They refuse to accept the will of the people. They embrace political violence. They don't believe in democracy. Again, a string of absolutely factual true statements. And the standard bearer for the Republican base now, I mean, she and Marginal Trailer Queen. Oh, and by the way, there's a new name for Marginal Trailer Queen out there that I ran across the other day that was pure genius. And I loved it. Marginal Trailer Queen, Taylor. Yeah, try this one on for size. Margarine-flavored gin. God, that's disgusting even to think about it. Yeah, I'll have a martini with that margarine-flavored gin. Very lipid. Margarine-flavored gin. But Joe Biden said that, and he said so correctly, and she responded, how the heck can Joe Biden call America First conservatives a threat to democracy with a straight face and a dry diaper? He's the one who's allowed millions to invade our southern border. Yeah, he allowed them. Just stood down there and right. And here's your calendar from the bank, and here's a driver's license, and no, of course not. You know, we created an immigration crisis at the southern border through years and years and decades and generations of mucking about in Central American politics and making it so that people felt like they needed to flee the places where, in some instances, their ancestors have lived for, oh, I don't know, 15,000 years? How can Joe Biden say that with a straight face and a dry diaper? Because, see, here's the funny thing. Once again, everything that we know about Nitwit Nero, they suspect or try to project upon President Biden. And right up to and including, you know, the Depends. Depends. And Mr. Biden, the debate question, and Mr. Biden, boxers or briefs? Oh, boxers. And Mr. Trump, boxers or briefs?
Depends.
Sorry, just it's an oldie but a goodie. So she's our lead moron. And the White House is in fight back mode. And God love them for being there. Representative Kevin Hearn on Twitter said, to recap, in the last 2 weeks, the Party of the People has supercharged the IRS to go after working-class Americans, raise their taxes, and force them to pay for other people's college degrees. To which the White House Twitter account noted, Congressman Kevin Hearn had over $1 million in PPP loans forgiven. And Mike Kelly, stepping on a rake, said, asking plumbers and carpenters to pay off the loans of Wall Street advisors and lawyers isn't just unfair, it's also bad policy. Well, never mind the fact that the people getting student loan forgiveness will be making are people making less than $75,000 or $100,000 a year. The White House shot back saying Congressman Mike Kelly had $987,237 in PPP loans forgiven. Do they not know that this is what they're going to get back? Does it just never dawn on them? Are they that goddamn dumb? You gotta wonder sometimes. Or maybe they just think that, none of the maggots will ever do. All the maggots are over on Truth Social. They're not even on Twitter anymore. But there's a huge list of Republicans who are pissing and moaning about student loan debt forgiveness, while at the same time benefiting from Paycheck Protection Program loan forgiveness. Never went after any of that. Darn it. So, the hypocrisy is at 11 among the Republicans. Lesbian dance theory. Because, nobody'd want to study lesbian dance theory. Right? Because, what? Lesbians don't dance? Or lesbians don't engage in theoretical dance? Jesus. Oh, well. Yeah, I know. Steve in New York says, what the hell happened? Democrats are starting to poke Republicans in their eyes. And it's a delightful thing to behold, frankly. Steve added, it occurs to me that morons are the only thing whose growing and harvesting seasons are 24/7 and simultaneous. I know. They grow faster than... Well, maybe that's an apt analogy. They are like unto political kudzu. Yeah, I kind of like that. Although kudzu actually has... I know it's kind of amazing to ponder, but yeah, kudzu has usefulness. If I recall correctly, the root of kudzu is an edible part of Japanese cuisine. We never got around to eating it here, though. I don't entirely know why, except for the fact that it's, kudzu. I mean, we adopted sushi. We've gotten into tofu. I don't know. Get out there and get in on the kudzu futures. It may be the next big thing. Oh, and not a Morin Monday moment. Not by any stretch of the imagination, but a bit of a celebration. I had word from Brother Deacon Asa yesterday evening that there was, in fact, a mini horn-in, and that it was a good time was had by all. Brother Deacon Asa wrote and said, I can happily report that the Puget Sound chapter of the horn-in went swimmingly. I even played my first game of pool in 20 years. Naturally, Slick Rick kicked my ass all the way around the block twice. They met at a pizza joint. And damn, it looks like some good pizza. And so there's Brother Deacon Asa, and there's Jude, and Billable Rick. And Billable Rick's son, Brian. And all we were missing was Christopher to crash the party. And it was just apparently it was just an absolutely delightful time. So I'm terribly jealous, but I'm glad to know that there's a Puget Sound chapter of the Horn Family Community Congregation. That must have been absolutely wonderful. So congrats to everybody who showed up. And it's so nice when members of the Horn Family Community Congregation get to develop face-to-face IRL, not Indy Racing League, in real life relationships. It just beautiful. Steve in New York adds, President Biden has been super trolling Orange Voldemort and able to use more than a 10-word vocabulary, and it's great. Using big words. And no inappropriate adverbs like bigly. The Puget Sound horn-in lead in New York adds, they were at a pizza joint? Stay out of the basement! Could we celebrate calling them simply maggots by having a lesbian dance? Irish Dave asking. Missed class the day they taught who leads, so could you tell us? Well, as soon as I get into one, I'll get right back to you. Maybe it's kind of anarchic, you know. Anarchy means without a leader. Updating list of things to keep close and protect on Moran Monday. Christopher says, Robin, you need to update your list of things to hold close. SAP Special Access Program, top secret documents, and SCI Sensitive Compartmented Information. Again, top secret documents. Oh, agreed. Got a photograph from Darlene in Connecticut earlier. Oh, my God, love her suit. Yes, a photograph of Vice President Harris. And, yeah, she is put together. I love that sort of, I don't know, what is that, a dusty rose or a light mauve? That's really pretty. But no, we are nowhere near done with Morans. We're just getting started. But again, it's kind of interesting to notice that, you know, it only takes 2 or 3 weeks, but they do get around to talking about the same stuff we talk about here. So you can, you know, if you want to know what's really happening, you know, you'll hear it here first. And so it was this morning with my filthy morning habit when Joe cut loose with some less than kind words for Lady G. Lady G's been out there tweeting about how if Nitwit Nero gets indicted, why the maggots will riot in the streets. Yes. And Lindsay don't want to have to do no riots. He's very comfortable there underneath the fainting couch with a Darvon and a margarita there at the ancestral estate of Smoldering Chode. Yes. Funny that, because one of the things that there are little tells, you know, because we got into a conversation on Friday on the front porch about when some action might be taken relative to Nitwit Nero's manifest criminality. Well, a ruling, the judge overseeing the Fulton County, Georgia grand jury special investigation into Nitwit Nero's attempt to subvert the electoral process in Georgia, Judge Robert McBurney issued a ruling earlier today to the effect that Georgia Governor Brian Kemp will indeed have to appear before the aforementioned special grand jury. And he also put a date on it. And so thanks to this ruling, we know that the Fulton County Special Grand Jury looking into Nitwit Nero's allegedly criminal attempts to subvert that election. Well, the judge ruled that Brian Kemp will have to testify, but he does not have to testify until after the election on November 8th. That's kind of a big deal. Because then, by definition, we understand that no indictments will issue from that special grand jury until after November 8th. So it gives us something of a... It's not a terribly precise one, but something of a timeline. And the idea of rioting maggots... Well, like I said, Morning Joe did not take kindly to this here riot talk. Okay, well, all right. Well, thank you. Thank you, Ron and Raleigh. Fix yourself a mess. And a mess is a Southernese term meaning a serving of. Get in the kitchen and whip up a mess. From Asian, vegan, and beyond, Kuzumochi Kudzu Mochi. Well now, just might have to whip up a mess. And that's the Japanese word for kudzu mochi. Kuzumochi. Kuzu. And apparently Asian, vegan, and beyond says that kudzu is in fact becoming more popular in the States. It's the root of the plant, and the name comes from a plant named kuzu in Japanese, also known as arrowroot. Kudzu is starchy and used as a thickener. Does this mean, and the popular dessert made of kuzu is called kuzu mochi. Very light and has a jelly-like consistency. I'm not sure how I'm going to feel about that. Jelly-like? Yeah. Does that mean it's not the same thing as the stuff that covers up entire entire little swales and consumes phone poles? Is that not the same kudzu? I want to think it is, but, you know, I could be, of course, wrong. Yeah, we'll get to that. P.S., Ron adds, Trump-appointed judge says she's leaning toward appointing a special master that she has no jurisdiction to appoint. Yeah, oh well. But anyway, back to Angry Joe in the Morning, who doesn't like the idea of maggots running wild through the streets.
Yeah, you know, actually, he'd said that he was off the Trump train. That he'd stepped off after January 6th, after those riots. He cared about those riots until three people and a hound dog chased him in Washington National Airport. And then he got right back on the train. But, you know, it's fascinating that he... talks about riots. Jonathan Lear, I don't have really good memory. I can't remember, but I think we had riots on January the 6th, and when you had leaders trying to get people like Lindsey Graham to support an investigation into those riots, he had no interest in that. Had no interest in investigating those riots, but now he's worried about riots in the future coming from Republicans, coming from his party, coming from Donald Trump supporters. And again, also, the irony is so rich, these people that have talked about riots, Black Lives Matter riots, it's all they talk about. It acts as if there were no peaceful marches at all, just riots. It's all they talk about. And yet they're fine when Trump riots are actually putting democracy at risk, when they're trying to overturn an election result. And Lindsey's even fine threatening riots, saying, you know, Trump supporters will riot in the streets. There will be violence if he's held to account, if he broke the law. It's great. Again, this party of law and order, this supposed party of law and order that's saying defund the FBI, that's calling law enforcement officials the Gestapo, that are now threatening riots. Lindsey's now threatening Republican riots in the street if Donald Trump is held to the same standard as Lindsey Graham or anybody else in the Senate or the House. That's a hell of a transformation over the past 2 years.
Yeah, it was barely 18 months ago when we had riots at the U.S. Capitol, the very citadel of our democracy, riots fueled by that man, Donald Trump, and those his allies who for months lied about the election and whipped up his supporters into acts of violence. And it does feel like we're heading down a similar path. These dog whistles, these breadcrumbs, these almost invitations to violence that we're starting to hear from Republicans saying this could happen if something bad were to go down with Donald Trump, if he were indicted. And that's very dangerous stuff. And we talked earlier in the show about how we know there's been a remarkable spike in threats against law enforcement officers in the wake of the Mar-a-Lago search. And we have now been living with, in the January 6th environment, the most normalization, if you will, of violent political discourse, perhaps in our country's history, at least in a century and a half. And that is something that a lot of intelligence agents and law enforcement personnel and lawmakers alike are all deeply worried about violence that could come with this November's midterms and certainly the 2024 presidential election. And comments like this from Senator Graham just are kicking the hornet's nest and stirring up more trouble and deeply, deeply disturbing.
Well, and of course, the greatest risk, Mika, is caving to the threats.
Yeah.
All right. Well, okay. All right, Lindsey, if you are trying to stir up Republican riots, if you think Republicans are going to riot in the street, Republicans are going to riot in the street. They're not above the law. They'll be arrested.
Yeah, we've already seen this.
They'll go through the same thing that the people who listened to Donald Trump on January the 6th are going through. If you break the law, you're held to account. And if the answer to Republicans threatening violence on the FBI, the answer to Republicans threatening violence in the streets is not backing down. It's holding those people accountable, just like you hold Donald Trump accountable if they break the law.
Republicans were leaders. If these Republicans were true leaders and their true focus was the United States of America, was serving our country, then they would lead and say, when someone has done something wrong, when someone has threatened our democracy, when top secret documents that threaten our nation and lives are being stolen from our U.S. government, from our country, one must be held to account.
Yeah, you know what
that's saying? Please be peaceful.
You know what that's saying?
Don't threaten violence.
They'd say, you know what? Let this investigation run its course. They'd say what we've been saying. Nuclear secrets? We have no evidence of nuclear secrets. There's a source that told the Washington Post there were nuclear secrets. I don't see any evidence of nuclear secrets. Nothing in those papers that say nuclear secrets. So the left needs to wait. Mm-hmm. The right needs to wait. Let the process run its course. And for the Wall Street Journal editorial page to say, is this all there is? No, they know. They know that's not all there is. Let's let it run its course. Maybe, maybe there's some serious, damage to America's national intelligence. Maybe there's not. We have to wait and see. We need to let justice run its course, something that Republicans like Lindsey Graham obviously think are a threat to their party.
I mean, he's late to the party, Joe is, but he finally got here. Now it becomes, this is where I become, I guess, confused. I mean, Stephen New York says, you know, I hate cops. I'm going to abolish the police person. However, I've never wanted anyone to kill cops. No, nor I. But, well, that's who the maggots are. And I don't know, I don't care how much Lauren Bobblehead Boobert and Margarine Flavored Gin complain about it. They are the party of cop killers. But what I'm confused about, I'm sorry, I got sidetracked there for a second. What I find confusing is the interplay, and I, of course you have to put a caveat with this that, you know, everything is, well, nothing is as it seems, simply because of what is forming, what forms a majority on the Supreme Court of the United States. There is nothing about, and I'd kind of like to know what kind, what the, you know, let's say there's a law school out there, and, you know, every law school, every law degree is a three-year degree, I think. And, you know, I'd kind of like to know what law students, what the debate is like inside law schools right now. Because I remember conversations about how process worked and how change eventually developed. I had a civil procedure professor once, magnificent man, brilliant mind, huge baseball fan. He would cancel class for the first his whatever classes he was teaching. He would cancel class on the first day of baseball season every year. And encouraged his students to go and get around a TV screen and participate, even at a distance, in the great American pastime. There's a beautiful series on Amazon Prime right now. I kind of wondered why they would turn it into a series, but A League of Their Own, the story of women's professional baseball in the World War II years. And I've watched the first couple of episodes, and it is absolutely brilliant and a delight to watch. But anyway, my professor taught civil procedure. And that's where you learn about the rules of how civil lawsuits work, you know, the service of process and motions to dismiss and motions for summary judgment, and it was an attempt to standardize a bunch of arcane legal terms like demurrer to an allegation. But he talked about how, and this was in his discussion of fails to state a claim upon which relief can be granted. Rule 12b-6. And he started out with one of these little cups. Well, I mean, it wasn't. It just looked like a little plastic disc. And the analogy he gave was that people would go in with a claim and say, "This is a cup. And the defense would say, no, it's clear at common law that is not a cup. And he fleshed out the argument a little bit, and eventually he took the little lid off. And it turned out it was one of those little plastic telescoping cups from, like, the 1960s. And said, see, it is a cup. And he talked about platonic ideals. It was a magnificent class. And by those means, he taught us that the law changes and evolves, and generally does so well behind what happens in the real world. The ultimate effect of that is that a lot of people have to get hurt before the law takes cognizance of the reality of a claim, or a kind of claim. And he urged us to be the best people we possibly could in our careers. He's a fantastic professor. And so I know how we were taught about the overall process, state supreme courts, finality of decisions, and what the Supreme Court was all about itself. There's a whole class called Federal Courts. I took it. And at the end of the day, there was this notion that in a closely divided court, 5-4, that kind of thing, that you would see that you would see something resembling the court struggling to achieve something along the lines of balance. And of course, this was during the time of the was it the Rehnquist court by then, or was it the end of the Berger court? Anyway, it doesn't matter. But you had some great liberals on the court, and you had some conservative weirdos, and that there was an attempt to. But I wonder if you're a law student now, what do you think about the legal landscape into which you are going to emerge and begin the practice of law, relative to things like the Supreme Court? Because I say that as all sort of preface to the dynamic tension between, say, Precious Lindsay's speech and debate clause immunities versus the prior restraint laws on the books of most jurisdictions against incitement to riot. Because what Lindsay was saying smelt an awful lot like, I don't know, like a threat. That he was threatening the Department of Justice and the United States as a whole with violent insurrection should the legal and law enforcement community of the country reach a law-based judgment that Nitwit Nero should be charged with some crime or crimes. And it's frightening. I mean, we could be flip about it. We could be sarcastic about it. We could say, well, maybe based on what they learned on January 6th, this time the cops will do something about the assholes who bring the AR-15s to their little seditious insurrections. But the question is, how does Lindsey Graham get away with throwing down the gauntlet of insurrection and not be legally taken to task for it? And yes, it is reminiscent of things that happened 170 years ago. When senators would openly threaten to split the country and open up a can of a monstrous barrel of blood and death, which they then went on to do. Remember, before he went off down to Montgomery, Alabama on Gold Hill to be sworn in as the first and only president of the Confederacy, Jefferson Davis was a sitting member of the Senate of the United States. You know, just like Miss Lindsay. And he did things similar. To what and talked things similar to what Lindsay is blathering on about. Then there's a certain symmetry to the fact that Lindsay, of course, comes from South Carolina, which is the home of sedition in the United States of America. It is where it was born and bred, going all the way back to the time of John C. Calhoun, well before the Civil War. You know, whom Andrew Jackson threatened to hang. And, you know, John C. Calhoun having been Andrew Jackson's own vice president. So, this is one of those wait and sees. And I don't, how do, with the exception of the ballot box, which no one in South Carolina is going to use to any good effect, how do you punish a Lindsey Graham for threatening the Republic with insurrection and bloodshed? And of course, the way we read and understand laws against incitement now, most courts would probably say, well, you know, his comments were vague and situated somewhere in the future, and he demonstrated no ability or inclination to do anything in the present moment, and thereby making a distinction between what Lindsay is threatening and, say, you know, yelling fire in a crowded theater, which has an immediacy and an immediate effect that is decidedly more profound. So I don't know. I don't know. But we are being, it does feel like we are being driven toward an insane brink. You know, even as we speak, within the live program, Nitwit Nero's probably composing, if you can even use that word to describe his mad babblings. He is, to put it colloquially, freaking out about what I think he knows better than anyone else is coming his way. And so he ratcheted the big lie up again today, over on his failing so-called social media platform, Truth Social, which incidentally is apparently rife with cueballery. People analyzing Truth Social's so-called membership have noted that dozens of QAnon accounts are being allowed to organize on Truth Social. Gizmodo had the report. And remember, Nitwit Nero once said that,
I don't know much about QAnon. Basically, they believe in good government.
So curiously, over on Truth Social, according to the Gizmodo article, researchers with media watchdog group NewsGuard reported today that there were 88 users, oh dear, there's that number again, with more than 10,000 followers regularly posting QAnon nonsense. More than half of those accounts were verified, similar to Twitter's own verification system. And Nitwit Nero is platforming at least 30 of these accounts for a total of 54 times since he got on there. And by the way, Truth Social, like any Nitwit Nero Dodge, has a hosting bill of over $1 million that they're trying to stiff on. Oh well. But anyway, over at Truth Social, he started grunting over the fact that Mark Zuckerdweeb at Facebook publicly stated that the FBI had asked his company to watch out for Russian disinformation being published on his platform. This is like asking a farmer to close the door of a burning barn. And so, having heard about this, Nitwit Nero said,
"So now it comes out conclusively that the FBI buried the Hunter Biden laptop story before the election, knowing that if they didn't, Trump would have easily won the 2020 presidential election."
The only problem is it's not true. Never is with Nitwit Nero. That man would rather climb a tree naked. That man would rather climb a cactus naked and lie than stand on the ground and tell the truth. Because one of the things that Facebook did was they voluntarily, without any urging from the FBI, limited the ability of a New York Post story about Hunter Biden, the Benghazi of our time. We will hear about Hunter Biden until we're all fit to lose our minds. Hi, Scott. They limited the reach of that story in the fall of 2020. But it's not just that Nitwit Nero grunted about it. He went on to say,
"This is massive fraud and election interference at a level never before seen in our country. Remedy, declare the rightful winner or, and this would be the minimal solution, declare the 2020 election irreparably compromised and have a new election immediately."
And by rightful winner, I mean, the rightful winner was declared. And it was Joseph Robinette Biden by some 7 million American votes and some 74 electoral college votes. But he's still spreading the lie. And there's no way to stop it because free speech. I mean, someday his lies will stop. You know, when they put him in a box and put him out there next to Ivanka, Bed Monster. But until then, he's going to continue to try to incite another seditious insurrection. Maybe he's doubling down because he thinks that, what, that he will be carried back into office? like Gaius Marius gone mad in the early final century of the previous era. Didn't end well for Gaius Marius. He got damnatio memoriae, as a matter of fact. How does anybody hear a guy say that you should have a do-over of the 2020 election more than halfway through 2022 and think that that person is, well, sane? For the life of me, I can't. I mean, really, it's kind of like, I ran across another one of those members of a rare species over the weekend. I ran across a trans girl who was MAGA, and that just makes like my eyes cross and makes me want to run out into the yard and eat dirt and run rabbits and drink pint jars of pee-pee and put onions in my socks. I mean, tell me you hate yourself to the core of your being without telling me you hate yourself to the core of your being. You're trans and MAGA? Well, but then again, we can apply that to all kinds of marginalized groups. I mean, long before that, there were log closet Republicans. And, of course, there's, poor old dead Herb Cain. 999, y'all! Oh, sorry, Matt. Maybe there should have been a warning before that. Matt in San Francisco says, Trump cactus, thanks for that visual. I know. Didn't do me any good either, but sometimes, it's like, you open the doors of the belfry and the bats fly out. So that's the Phil Robster for this Moran Monday. Lord knows there's plenty more where that came from. I don't know if y'all caught this, but this is a real Lulu. You remember, of course you do, Megan, of course, Santa Claus is white, Kelly. Yeah. Lasted about 15 minutes at NBC before she, and she's a lawyer and stuff, and she was clever. She figured out a way to get $60 million out of NBC without actually having to go to work. That's some brilliance. But she's out there running her mouth on Sirius XM now. And we talked about the coming retirement of Dr. Fauci. Megan was right there, our little nut Meg.
He sounds like he's been invited to afternoon tea at one of our houses. I will consider it. I'll consider it. Only if it's oversight, because what I experienced was personal attacks. I will go if it's true.
Goddamned ads. They're like, starlings. Can't do a damn thing about them.
Fuck you, Dr. Fauci. You don't get to say whether you go. You get a congressional subpoena, you show up, or you get the Steve Bannon treatment.
Fuck you. Oh, she's using her fun words now that she's on Sirius XM. Fuck you, Megyn Kelly. You'll get the Steve Bannon treatment? How about all the other maggots who didn't get convicted? How about Mark Meadows? How many different places was he registered to vote
and didn't get touched. I mean, the idea of a maggot like Megyn Kelly trying to school people on congressional subpoenas, that's rich. But of course, it's within the context of, you know, when the Republicans take back the House of Representatives and Jim Jacketoff Jordan takes control of the gavel of the House Judiciary Committee. With any luck, luck hell, with any determination on the part of Democrats, that won't happen. If Democrats go out in November and vote like their lives depend on it, because they do, if marginalized communities go out and vote Democrat like their lives depend on it, because it does, maybe that won't happen and Jim Jacketoff Jordan will just have to tweet some more. Yeah. And I do love stories like this following one. Rolling Stone has the story of the fact that, Tangerine Tiberius has in fact gone full Captain Queeg and is now wobbling and galumphing around Merida Lardass or his hillbilly high-rise in Manhattan. And the object of his ire, you know, when it's not the FBI or Joe Biden, more and more the object of his ire is none other than Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis, the white supremacist adjacent governor of Florida who was only elected the first time with the help of real live actual no kidding Nazis. And the latest accusation, Aswin Subasong writing for Rolling Stone says that
DeSantis is ripping off my style. He's ripping the...
Yeah. Speaking to Rolling Stone, one nitwit Nero minion said, "Well, there was this time, maybe a year ago, that I remember him making fun of DeSantis for doing similar hand gestures and motions. He called it stealing from me and described it as a lame impression of Trump." I added the upspeak just to make it a little bit more real. Going on, the reporter notes, Trump has a distinct, and if we were doing video, you would see that I'm doing the Trump hand, the Trump invisible accordion now. Wah, 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 wah. Trump has a distinctive and much satirized way of gesticulating while casually talking, delivering political speeches, or even firing contestants on his former game show. The sources note that when Trump has seen video clips of DeKlantis speaking at public events over the past year and a half, the former president has scornfully mocked the ascendant Florida Republican for appearing to imitate Trump's body language, movements, and even at times speaking rhythm. One of the other sources recalls Trump joking at a dinner event earlier this year that he ought to sue DeSantis for copyright infringement. Yeah. That's right. That's right. The former guy, with all the spirochetes singing in the thin gray settling sloshing around between his ears and passing for brains, thinks you can copyright a hand gesture. Wow. And a GOP donor by the name of Dan Eberhardt said, DeSantis certainly mimics Trump's style, rhetoric, and body language. DeSantis' bombastic style seems to be ripped straight out of a Donald Trump style guide. Trump proved that Republican voters want a fighter, and DeSantis aims to deliver. Subasang notes, quote, Trump, who behind closed doors trashes DeSantis as charisma-free, has even toyed with launching a 2024 presidential campaign near the governor's mansion in Florida, which would double as an obvious effort to troll DeSantis. The ex-president has been taking stock of who he feels is sticking with him and who might defect to Team DeSantis in the Fox News primary. And a single Fox News primary, I didn't know that. Well, that's a thing. And has singled out hosts and informal Trump advisors like Frau Ingram as possible future defectors. Lord God, this is a bunker mentality, isn't it? It really is. Yeah, those marginalized communities I was talking about. I know. Ron and Raleigh says, how about blacks for Trump, Jews for Hitler, Uyghurs for Xi Jinping? When will the madness end? Well, there's always a few people that are eager to get in line to prove that they're one of the good ones. Palestinians for Bibi. And it's nonetheless jarring, you know what I mean? And by the way, also via Rolling Stone, no matter what it is that that he has filed, you know, requesting a special master and demanding that the FBI not look at classified documents that they have clearance to look at anyway. Well, a maggot judge said she was inclined to grant the special master request. Again, no jurisdiction, but oh well, you do you, judge. The DOJ has filed a document in court saying that, well, investigators have already reviewed the documents that they seized with the warrant from Mayor DeLardass, and it kind of moots, or would at least theoretically moot, his goofy request for a special master. You can only imagine who the special master might be. Rudy? The DOJ also said that the Office of the Director of National Intelligence is, quote, facilitating a classification review of materials recovered pursuant to the search. ODNI is also leading an intelligence community assessment of the potential risk to national security that would result from the disclosure of these materials. Aw, darn. Yeah, the maggot judge in question is Eileen Cannon. They have to show up, I guess, on what? This Thursday? On his request for a special master. And the maggot judge also said that the DOJ has to provide a receipt of the items removed from Trump's property. How do you give a thief a receipt? Anybody? A little help here? Let's see. Okay, that's one. Let's see. That's one flat screen television, one laptop, 37 pieces of silverware. Okay, here's your receipt for all the shit you stole, you hood. So Thursday should be interesting. Oh, hell, who am I kidding? It's all just terribly, terribly interesting. Tom and Sonny San Rafael. Trump, DeSantis hand gestures. Oh, you mean the gang signs? Yeah, the gang signs. Yeah, the gang sign stuff. Precisely. And Steve in New York noting, subject line, copyright. Clearly, Alina, parking garage general counsel Haba, has advised him on this chess game. Brillianter than anyone else. Yeah. Super double plus extreme brilliance. Okay, that's a visual, Steve. I can't do anything with that. Well, again, this is clearly a case that the Trump DeClantis feud, this is clearly a case of come on, let's you and him fight, followed by a rousing chorus of gee, I hope it doesn't hurt too little. And we get to watch. We get to watch it play out in real time. And there is a passage, an article at The Guardian by Hugo Lowell. Mr. Lowell noticed a particular little bit of language in the affidavit that wasn't blacked out. On my Filthy Morning Habit this morning, Lowell pointed out a reference to a specific place and explained the meaning that he got from it.
The former president's lawyers might themselves be witnesses to that because of their interactions with the Justice Department. And so I think that's really indicative of the general inability for them to find some cogent legal defense here.
Hugo,
all right, oh, I'm sorry, Rev, go ahead.
No, I was just going to ask Hugo, the fact that he is fighting so, I'm talking about Trump, and has given two or three different stories on why the documents were there, doesn't that raise the feeling that there may be some things there, that this is not just something that will amount to nothing? He's fighting hard and running out different scenarios that makes many of those that were not convinced one way or another feel he wouldn't be fighting this hard if there wasn't something there.
I think you picked up on a really interesting point, which is if there was an easy explanation for why these documents were there, let's say he had, you know, very straightforward defense, like, look, this was just pure incompetence. I didn't realize I couldn't have these documents here. He should just say that, and he would just say that. The fact that he has to go through all these different iterations of various arguments and defenses and complaints about the Justice Department seems to be indicative of the fact that he isn't quite sure what the most effective tactic might be. It's, you know, this classic Trump playbook of trying to throw everything out the wall. And so this is why you get the different arguments and none of them really stick.
And so in particular, Lowell went on to say the fact that Pine Hall was mentioned, you know, among other places, was really interesting. Pine Hall is an entranceway at Merida Lardass that leads into Trump's area. And so the fact that the FBI has pinpointed that location suggests to me, and certainly to people around the former president, that the FBI has someone on the inside, someone close to Trump himself or around his family, that knows the kind of documents that were being left around them. That spooked them, to have that level of detail and knowledge. It's not going to come from people from the help or the staff that close quarters to the former president. The calls are coming from inside the house. Oh, that's just delicious, isn't it? We can hardly resist the urge to speculate. Oh, come on. You know we all want it to be Iwanka. rolling on daddy. Not that way. There are no concrete parrots involved this time. But we want it to, yeah. I mean, is Tafania close enough that maybe she could, you know, rat him out for never having been there for her? You know, we've said all along that Traitor Tot, that Nitwit Nero we don't have to speculate on this. There's actual reportage that he said, that Nitwit Nero said,
well, if somebody has to go to jail, it would be better if it was Donald Jr. than Iwanka. Don Jr. could handle it. Iwanka couldn't.
Oh, just treat it like another camping trip, Iwanka. I mean, is it possible that this is getting really close? This is beginning to get kind of Game of Thronesy, Red Wedding-ish, isn't it? What if it was like one of those classic murder mysteries? I'm not saying there's going to be a murder involved. Oh, maybe there already was. By the way, us speculating about what's in the box at Bed Monster, it has an official name now. Because the multimillionaire for-profit media simply cannot resist both cidering things. So you've got a bunch of white wing goons running around swearing up and down that Hillary Clinton drinks blood and Huma Abedin wears children's faces on her face, and children are being sex trafficked in the basement of a DC pizza joint that doesn't have a basement, and you know, all the general twisted idiocy that is cuballery. And now the fact that some people on our side of the equation are wondering, as I just said, what's in the box? But surely Ivana Trump was cremated. Well, yes, she certainly was, but they keep her about in the grate of the fireplace. She can be seen sometimes in ashtrays. No, the fact that we're wondering what's in the box at Bed Monster, it now has a name called BlueAnon. But you know, we're not saying that Ivana is secretly alive and is going to come back and spill the beans about the husband she once testified under oath kept a copy of Hitler's speeches by the bedside for a little late night reading. We don't think she's out hanging around with JFK Jr. But how can you resist the urge to wonder? Because that whole situation just begs for wondering. Lee in New York says, I want the leaker to be Tiffany. Imagine this. She's the one ignored. She could get them to implicate each other. She'd be laughing as they all bleed. I thought you threw me under the bus. I thought you threw me under the bus. Wait, who's not under the bus? There's you, and there's Eric the Dumber, and there's me, and Tiffany. Yeah. Steve notes, I've said I think it's Iwanka because she's gone silent. What if we need to look at the one who's shouting the loudest? Could the mole therefore be Donald Jesus Trump Jr.? God, the urge to speculate on this madness is every bit as well. It's like a bowl of nuts at a party. I mean, you just how do you stay out of it? And Reverend Sharpton, Steve notes, that's polite, proper reverend speak for Trump is scared shitless. Yeah, they won't let him say the brown word yet on MSNBC. But that pretty much is, you know, what it is. Yeah, I agree. And Brother Deacon Asa sending me an emoji says, I have a hand gesture rat cheer. That's R-A-T-C-H-E-E-R. Rat cheer for both Stump and DeClantis. And it is an emoji of a middle finger. Yes. What would you give for just a few hours, minutes even, of recordings at Shea Trump these days? Because by the time it gets filtered onto Truth Social, you know, the real Captain Queegery has been, you got to figure, watered down a little bit. And for that to be a watered down version, oh my God. Clearly, Ivana is alive, and she'll be running as Jim Morrison's running mate. Yes, with campaign manager Elvis. Oh, and speaking of which, that movie. Oh, I was agnostic, but wow. Aaron Butler, the guy who plays Elvis. 15 minutes into the film and you've forgotten that he's an actor. That is Elvis. Wow. And thank you, kind internet stranger, for sharing that with me. Obligatory Let's Make a Deal reference from Lee in New York. What's in the box? Monty Hall says, where Carol Bone Marrow is now standing. Oh, Carol Marrow? Oh, yeah. That was an easy award. And so we are at the halfway point of the program for this Moran Monday. I told you there'd be many Morans. And like I said, we are in a $2,100 fundraising hole. And it would be nice if we could alleviate some of that, pretty please. PayPal button's over at headon.live. I really hate mentioning it, but there we go. Mar-a-Lago reporting is that ketchup shipments have quadrupled to Mar-a-Lago. buy, get in on the ketchup futures. Oh, a friend gave me a couple of fresh tomatoes out of the garden today, and we stood and waxed nostalgic for being that time in the faraway times when you just wander into the garden as a kid with the salt shaker out of the kitchen, knock the dust off of a tomato hanging ripe from the vine, warm from the sun, and then just lick the tomato and salt that first bite into it like an apple. After that, you know, you just keep salting, you keep biting, you keep salting, you keep biting. Oh, that was heavenly. So I've got two fresh tomatoes, and there will be blats. Bacon, lettuce, avocado, and tomato. I'm going to check and make sure that my lettuce doesn't come from wherever the hell Wendy's gets theirs, because, well, somebody's pooping on the lettuce again. Damn it. Stop that. Actually, it's the irrigation practices, most likely. But I don't like my lettuce with a side of E. coli, and I suspect no one else does either. As to Megyn Kelly a few minutes ago, Kevin in Massachusetts says, Megyn Kelly, always thought she brought nothing to the table whenever I saw her on Fox. She's just the typical Fox blonde, and it really comes through on radio. Yeah, she's got a highfalutin Shure SM7B that she taught. You know, she doesn't use the golden EIB mic or no. You know, just to be a tech nerd for a minute, I love that Shure SM7B, but it's got that one wire that just sticks out from it. And every time I think about it, it's like, no, I know who I am, and I know what I'll do, and I know what'll happen, and that wire will get cut or knocked loose, or, and then it'll be a $500 paperweight. So I'll just stick with the same RE20 that I've been using for almost 20 years. My God, they are fantastic microphones. Thank you, Ralphs. Ralphs says, I'll contribute $25 if others kick in $25, someone other. So if you've got $25 that you would like to help knock us down below $2,100 to finish the month, it's basically $700 a night. If you've got $25, Ralphs will double it and turn your $25 into $50. But somebody's got to, yeah, you get the idea. And, of course, this is Conversation Radio. If you've got something you think you would like to add to the conversational weight and the heft of the program, by all means, reach out. The stress line, of course, is 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN. And you can also reach via Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. One of these days I'm going to remember and change that. Kind of had a moment over the weekend where I'm, you know, yeah, Bob is long gone. I am. Yeah. Hey, thank you, Roger. Roger jumped right in and met Ralph's challenge. Thank you, Roger. That's so very kind of you. So that gets us down to 2050. 2050 to go to finish August. Thank you, Roger. Oh, I can't resist this one for a Moran Monday. This is just too beautiful. The story was published at Politico, and it has to do with Nimrata Haley. Hailed. See what I Haley? Hailed. Yeah. Professional. Hailed as a leading light of the Republican Party's hopes for someday maybe offering up a woman to be president of the United States. And she thinks she's got presidential timber, and every time her name comes up, you know what I think about. I think about that time that the Morning Zoo crew from Moscow 91.7 The Volga guys in the morning, when they called her and pretended to be the president of Poland, and she said, well, okay, Mr. Polish President of Poland, what can I do for you as ambassador to the United Nations for the United States of America? And they proceeded to talk about an imaginary island nation called Bonomo. And she just sat there and took it all in because, well, she's a genius. Oh, for pity's sakes. But no, really. Well, she's like any good grasping Republican, MAGA. She's formed up a non-profit corporation, essentially a legal money laundering outfit. And her non-profit is, of course, geared toward this dream she has that she might be all presidential in 2024. Maybe, oh, I don't know, this would make sense. Florida and South Carolina, if Monkey Up could get the nomination, that he would maybe nominate her as his running mate. Think of it as the Dumb and Dumber ticket. Tweedledum and Tweedledumber. Of course, she'd also probably, seeing as how Mike Pence won't be in the mix, she might very much like to be Nitwit Nero's running mate if he was to get the nomination. But she is, after all, Nimrata Haley, not particularly intelligent woman. So a bunch of mega donors inside the MAGA party have queued up to give her lots and lots of big old money checks to start her nonprofit. And the name of her little dodge is called Stand for America Incorporated, Inc. And she had to file papers with the IRS. And Politico reported that the roster of supporters who gave undisclosed donations in 2019 also includes Suzanne Youngkin, the wife of Virginia Governor Glenn Youngkin, himself a possible presidential contender, former Pennsylvania Senate candidate and hedge fund executive David McCormick, and Vivek and Lakshmi Garapalli, members of a New Jersey family that has donated large sums to Democrats, but which gave Haley's organization $1 million. It's called bet hedging. The donor list also includes dozens of people who gave anonymously to Haley's nonprofit but have not given disclosed contributions to her PAC, which was formed 2 years later and is required to regularly disclose the names of donors who give at least $200. Those contributors include the Garapallis and GOP mega donor Joe Ricketts, appropriately named. Here's the funny thing, though. They were supposed to be anonymous, but Politico, well, no. Apparently Nimrata's brain trust wasn't quite sharp enough not to make it possible for the names to be learned. Like other nonprofits, Stand for America files an annual tax return with the IRS, while the agency and the nonprofit must make those filings available to the public, including the amounts of contributions to the group. Such nonprofits do not have to disclose the identities of their donors. However, the organization documented, which describes itself as a nonpartisan government watchdog that investigates money and politics, obtained an unredacted copy of Stand for America's 2019 filings, which it then shared with Politico. The group did not share the original source of the filing, but it bears a stamp from the charity office of the New York State Attorney General. And Nikki Haley, Nimrata, having found out that she'd been once again bonomoed, tried to block the publication of the story, and she failed. When Politico published the story, they included a statement from Nimrata. This disclosure of a confidential tax return was clearly a corrupt violation. Really, a corrupt violation, Ms. Bonomo? So it wasn't just it was a corrupt violation, yes. Does that mean that the violation wasn't a legitimate violation, or that it wasn't executed properly, the violation? We're a little unclear, Nimrata. This disclosure of confidential tax return was clearly a corrupt violation of state and federal law to try to intimidate conservative donors. Liberals have always weaponized government against conservatives, and Republicans have been too nice for too long. We will make sure the buck stops here. Ms. Haley, There's a call from the president of Bonomo. Oh, I need to get that. Liberals have always weaponized government against conservatives. You know, after January 6, 2021, I really don't think Republicans should ever talk about anybody weaponizing anything against anybody who isn't, you know, a Republican. January 6, 2021, they brought AR-15s and took up sniper positions. And killed people. But don't anybody tell Nimrata. Yeah, I get it. Subject line, Nikki, Jeremy in Vermont says, I say more like bimbo-moded, but give yourself a cowbell regardless. Okay, thank you, I will. I appreciate that. And Darlene in Connecticut, going back to Blue Anon. Seriously? The Q freaks made up the pizza Hillary lies out of thin air. We didn't do anything on our side. Trump actively stole and illegally withheld secret documents for many reasons, including wanting to believe and feel that he was still president. This shit begs for speculation, and it's not and never will be as insane as what the Q freaks concoct. If they're accusing others of pedophilia and murdering children to go all Jeffrey Dahmer by wearing body parts, then you can be sure that is exactly what they are doing. Strap in. It's only going to get weirder and wilder. And amen, sweet Jesus, Darlene. I mean, this is bat country. This is what Hunter S. Thompson, Dr. Thompson, was talking about when he said, when the going gets weird, the weird turn pro. It's feeling pretty professional out there. And thank you, Mary. Mary jumped in on Ralph's challenge, too. Thank you, Mary. That gets us down to 2025 in our desperate struggle to stay afloat in this little, what did Ed Schultz call it? The bake sale radio operation. Still here. Oh, Nimrata. You know, they didn't have to put the names of the donors on the paper, but, well, here we are. And life just keeps getting, speaking of weird, weirder and wilder for the, and it's kind of hard to say this, but, well, that's the world we live in, for the Republican nominee for governor of the state of Arizona, Stan. Hi, Suman. Carrie Lake, a TV talking head who got canned for paranoidly complaining that she was ditched for not being able to tell the truth about the 2020 election or some such blithering idiocy. Well, you recall last week we talked about a guy named Jaron Jackson who said that... the Jews are evidence that evil exists and Jews will go to hell, and Carrie Lake eagerly endorsed him. Now, Carrie was not having a lot of fun after Ruben Gallego of Arizona, who himself may have ambitions of running for Kirstie and Kirsten Sinema's seat in the Senate, if he gets reelected in November. Representative Gallego tweeted, only reason Carrie Lake supports an anti-Semite or a homophobe for office is because she is both. And having spoken the truth about her, she responded by posting a picture of Ruben Gallego riding a camel alongside Representative Eric Swalwell and tweeting, "Are we playing the guilt by association game? How's your friend Eric doing? Did he introduce you to Fang Fang?" Oh my. You see, once upon a time, Eric Swalwell was approached by a Chinese spy named Christine Fang. This was 10 years ago, by the way. The FBI reached out to Mr. Swalwell and said, "Sir, Christine Fang is a Chinese spy." And Eric Swalwell then said, "Okay then, thanks for the heads up, fellas," and got as far away from her as he possibly could. And told the FBI everything that she had said. But of course, this doesn't matter to the maggots because, well, they've got their own little Chinese spy problem. And Russian spy problems. You remember when the Chinese spy went wandering onto the grounds of Mayor de Lardass, armed to the teeth with electronic devices? No. Speak into my brooch, President Trump. Closer. Yeah, there. Right. Yeah, you got it. Okay, go ahead. And by the way, no untoward words were ever said about Eric Swalwell. But the fact is, Carrie Lake endorses homophobic anti-Semites. And Ruben Gallego, however, is a fighter because when she posted the camel picture or whatever, and Gallego said, "No, really, just say whether you agree with the candidate you endorsed. Should Jews go to hell?" And then he trolled her further and said, "Hi, still here. Are you still endorsing the anti-Semite?" But the thing is, when you're a maggot candidate, that's who you get. That's who's there. Because, for instance, she was seen palling around last year with, quote, a Nazi sympathizer who has a history of making white nationalist, racist, anti-Semitic, and pro-Nazi statements, including once calling, because there's always one of these. I mean, it's, Jesus, it's MAGA catnip, including once calling Adolf Hitler a complicated historical figure which many people misunderstand. She's also accepted gladly the endorsement of a freak by the name of Andrew Torba. Andrew Torba is the CEO of a social network that's just to the right of Genghis Khan. Network's called Gab. He himself is a raging anti-Semite. Among other things, he said, "Now you Jews need to stay off Gab. America's run by a Judeo-Bolshevik society." Eventually, Carrie Lake's campaign got around to disavowing the endorsement. "I absolutely denounce bigotry in all its forms." Until she endorsed Jaron Jackson. Yeah, Jaron Jackson, Steve in New York says, and his brother Participle Jackson? Oh, yeah, their family roots go all the way back to ancient Rome, and the patriarch Subjunctivus Jacksonus. Yeah, I know, that wasn't that good, was it? No. And thank you. Thank you, Jeremy. Jeremy says, "I have a tiny reserve after the Friday fire debacle. Here, have $5. So that gets us down to 2020.
I'm Hugh Downs. This is 2020.
And I'm Papa Wawa. I don't know why I did that. It's Monday. Thank you, Jeremy. 2020. And so, let's see, 80. We got 200. No, I wish. We've got, if we want to do this night by night, that means that we are down to $620 to go for fundraising this evening. It's a little easier sounding than 2020, isn't it? Yeah. Oh, and by the way, Jude says, we had a wonderful evening with Billable and his son Brian, an evening of pure delight. Next, I'll be sending the photo of our dear Asa. And Brother Deacon Asa just absolutely adored Jude, and everybody does who meets her. And gets a little better idea of why she is the spiritual advisor to the horn. Thank you, Jude. I can see the smiles on everybody's faces, and it's obvious that y'all were having a wonderful, wonderful evening. And we do have it's a couple of days old, but we have an update. Oh, yeah, and there's the Brother Deacon along with Brian. Jude says, we shared pizza that appeared to be 2 feet in diameter. I attempted to play pool with them, but needed to be reminded I was focusing on the eight ball, yet the table was filled with balls. I think it was Billable who quietly reminded me to focus on another ball. Yeah, you don't want to sink the eight ball. And you know, when your cue ball gets stuck behind the eight ball, that means you're kind of not in the best position. Hence, being the metaphor for being in rather dire straits, being that of being behind the eight ball. Lovely photos, Jude. Thank you. Like I said, a couple of days old, but. The problems of Alex Jones continue now in Connecticut. And not just the problems of Alex Jones, but the problem of Alex Jones's lawyer, we talked about him when he screwed the pooch in the trial down in Austin, Fandino Reynal. Who said that day in Connecticut, even after the debacle in Austin, said that his day in court in Connecticut was the worst day of my legal career. And he went on to say he was very, very worried about what happened because it was a disciplinary hearing for Fandino Reynal. And even Connecticut State Superior Court Judge Barbara Bellis was a little surprised when, during the disciplinary hearing, Fandino Reynal took the Fifth 25 times. Also questioned, Fandino Reynal just said it was awful. But Norm Pattis is Alex Jones's Connecticut counsel. That trial, by the way, is scheduled to begin on September the 13th. And Norm Pattis was the one who took the Fifth 25 times. And Judge Bellis apparently said from the bench, "This is highly unusual, I would say, at the least, if not unprecedented, for an attorney to take the Fifth during a show cause hearing." And then she made things worse by ordering the lawyers to submit briefs on the implications of the invocation of the Fifth Amendment 25 times. Wouldn't what be part of the discovery process, Randy Radar? This was a show cause hearing. As in, show cause why you should not be held in contempt or referred for disciplinary action, or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And thank you very kindly to Roger in Oregon. Thank you so much. We are now down below $2,000 to try to, we are at $1,970, $1,970, to be even with this evening. Thank you. Thank you, Roger, so much. Yeah, I know, Ralphs. Wow, taking the fifth 25 times. And apparently the jurors have been accepted for the September 13th trial. All they have to do now is pick three of the four alternate jurors, and they'll be ready to go on September the 13th. Do some, I know no one who's on the jury is listening, but, you know, I recommend doing some wrist curls just to strengthen the wrist a little bit, so that when you write the number one in on the verdict form, after you've checked off the yes boxes, yes, he did it, yes, he's liable, you just write the number one and a comma and three zeros and a comma and three zeros, and keep doing three zeros and a comma until, you know, your wrist gets tired. So you want a strong wrist and a good pen grip, so that you can do some justice for the slaughtered children of Sandy Hook and the miserable, vile purveyor of filth who rode the backs of the parents who so agonizingly grieved and will grieve until the end of their roads and days. Well, yeah, okay. Yeah, Randy Radar, that was part of the discovery process. The problem was Jones lied and got caught lying on the stand. By virtue of the fact that his lawyer screwed up and disclosed the entire contents, basically an image of his entire phone showing the sought material that he had claimed did not exist. So it's a possibility of layer upon layer of sanctions and references and findings and contempt and it all, yeah. It's a bad time, and you know, as we say, you know, for the lawyers there and for Alex Jones, I hope it doesn't hurt too little. Let's run over to the stress line, see what's going on. Hey, welcome to the program.
Did you say Norm Pattis? Did you say Norm Pattis is representing Alex Jones? I mean, that's not even why I called in. I was sitting here listening. I said, this is so fortuitous.
You know something I don't know. Hi, Darlene.
Oh, hey. You know, that's not even why I called in, but I'll get to Norm Pattis. I'm like stumbling over myself here. First of all, sad news. So I'm gonna put you on speaker so I can read this. Hold on. Can you hear me okay?
You're good.
Okay, good. All right. So, this was reported in The Guardian, I believe over the weekend. Yeah, Sunday. So, I don't know if you saw this, but Amazon activists mourn death of Man of the Hole, who was the last of his tribe. So, my Moran Monday, you know, nomination goes to Bolsonaro there. So, yeah. Jair Bolsonaro, the president of Brazil. So, this was a unidentified charismatic indigenous man thought to have been the last of his tribe, has died in the Brazilian Amazon and has caused consternation among activists lamenting a loss, not only of him, but of another ethnic language and culture. So he was solitary, mysterious man known as Indio do Barato, or the indigenous man of the hole, because he spent much of his existence hiding or sheltering in pits that he dug in the ground. So he, his land was attacked, friends and family were killed. He resisted all attempts to contact him, laying traps and shooting arrows at anyone who came too close. He endured atrocious massacres and land invasions. And so as the last of his tribe, they're saying the tribe is now extinct. It has not disappeared. It is extinct, which the activists say is a more active and genocidal process than disappearing. He didn't trust anyone. So apparently sometime in the 1980s, illegal ranchers, after leaving initial offerings of sugar, gave the tribe rat poison that killed all of his family and tribal members except for him. So he was so unwilling to even get help that when they, you know, or to take anything, like they would leave things like activist groups. There's a Survival International. It's a global movement for tribal people. They would leave things like food and weapons and things like that. He would reject them all. So they found him in a hammock. His body was lying in a hammock in a state of decomposition. He had placed brightly colored feathers around his body. So the official believes the man had prepared for death, and they estimate he was about 60 years old. So they said that the indigenous organizations put the number of remaining tribes at between 235 and 300, but the exact figure is hard to determine because some tribes have had very little contact with the rest of the society. So at least 30 groups are believed to be living deep in the jungle. So because he refused contact, he died without revealing which ethnicity he belonged to, nor the motivations of the holes he dug inside his house, and that Bolsonaro, he's a real asshole because the number of tribes whose land is under threat has soared because Bolsonaro, who took power in 2018, has basically made his contempt for indigenous people quite well known. He said that Brazil had erred by not decimating native peoples like the U.S. cavalry did.
Oh, God, that always comes home to roost, doesn't it?
Yep, so Bolsonaro is my Moran Monday nomination. He vowed not to give indigenous people one more square centimeter of land, and he has kept that promise. So I just wanted to mention that on your program. And
I'm glad you did because that just, God.
Yeah. It's a sad story.
It breaks my heart.
It's very sad. You know what's interesting, though, and I don't know if he made it himself, but there is a picture, like if people look at the Guardian article about the man in the hole, he is shown, somebody was able to capture him on film, and he's chomping at a tree, and it looks like he has a pretty decent axe, and it looks like it's been fashioned professionally, quote unquote. So I find that a little odd, but maybe he built it himself, but he's using an axe to chop a tree. But what's sad is not only the death of this person and how all of this came about, but also that there's another lost culture and language. You know, it's kind of reminiscent, you know, what happened on Easter Island with the Rapa Nui. You know, we don't, these are all lost languages. And cultures that we don't know about. They tried to reach out to this guy, but can you blame him for not, I mean, his entire tribe, his family, I mean, basically, he's a victim of a culling, you know, for all intents and purposes.
A genocide. And, you know, here we are, let's see, 530 years post, 530 years. Sorry. 530 years post the beginning of the European invasion of the Western Hemisphere. And it's been genocide all the way. And
yeah.
And there are so many of his stories. I don't know if you ever read it, Darlene, but there was a book called And I know Sparky's familiar with it, and a lot of folks out west are. I think the name of the book was Ishii, Ishii, and he was one of the. He was similar to this this man. He was the last, and.
Another one of a particular yeah.
Yeah, and of course.
Andrew Bolsonaro.
And Jair, look, Jair Bolsonaro is a war criminal. He is a genocidalist and an admitted genocidalist.
But again,
we have to go back, and we have to acknowledge that. You know, he has the support of a lot of other genocidalist Brazilians who put him in office. He's not some sleazy dictator who seized power via a coup against the will of the people. He was put there through an arguably democratic process. And so that makes the Brazilian people complicit in the genocide of these tribal peoples.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, the article certainly doesn't seem to take the perspective of Brazilians. It takes a perspective of international groups that are trying to preserve what's left of these tribes and learn more about them and their language, their various languages or dialects, that kind of thing. And it's interesting because, you know, what the United States does has impact. We set an example. He cited the U.S. cavalry as justification for his hatred of these indigenous tribes. Can you imagine, though, what it's like to survive successfully in the Amazon? I mean, to me, that's mind-blowing that this man, who they estimate is 60 years of age, he did it all on his own for many years because he had lost all of his family. And his tribe, you know, I mean, to survive in the Amazon, I mean, there's snakes and you know, all kinds of things going on there. But this is very sad. It's another huge loss. And it kind of maybe was just a blip on the radar, but I noticed it and wanted to mention it. The other thing I've been thinking, you know, it's interesting you brought up about what law students are thinking and doing, like, you know, as what they're graduating into. But I was thinking about this a couple of months ago. I'm like, how are law school professors teaching the law? How are they teaching constitutional law?
Yeah, how?
You know, I'm how? Because it's like, you know, I mean, my God, I mean, it's like the SCOTUS in its current configuration is basically put the con back into constitutional law. You know, that's, I'm like, how are they teaching this? How, you know, in the aftermath, I mean, I think it became starkly like, what are these kids learning? How are they teaching? You know, any decent professor, how the hell can they justify shit like this in the law schools to the students? You know, in the aftermath of Dobbs, you know, with the overturning of Roe in the aftermath by Dobbs. How, I'm like, what are they? Because at least the law school that I went to, there was a certain deference given to the SCOTUS. And it's not like they didn't make piss-ass poor decisions before. But there was something you could anchor, like our law, my law school professors could always anchor in stare decisis and precedent and things like that. How do they really, without really just coming right out and saying, this is political bullshit?
And, you know, there are examples that we can cite, Darlene. For instance, I think it was when I was talking with Rick Smith, either on or off air, when I was up in Pittsburgh, we talked about the potential return of the Lochner Court. And if you pay attention to these right-wing groups, and I trust you recall what Lochner was about, you know, mm-hmm. The ability of the state to regulate working conditions to try to protect workers. And mm-hmm. early on, the Supreme Court said, oh, no, privity of contract, you know, a completely made-up horseshit idea. And the fact of the matter is there are right-wing legal-type jurisprudence groups who yearn for the return of Lochner, okay? And what we have out of this court is that nothing is safe. You know, Slappy... Yeah, Slappy said that Griswold needs to go under the axe, and so does Lawrence, and so does Obergefell, mm-hmm. He didn't mention Bostock, but Bostock. But the bottom line is, in modern American legal theory, there have been, it's how I was taught it. You know, we went through a bad time, and that there has been a growth in rights theory throughout as history went forward in this country, so that you would, you know, so that your professor would point to say to would point to Dred Scott, would point to Plessy versus Ferguson, would point to Lochner and the Slaughterhouse cases, and Schenck and Froework and Debs. And say this is the court getting it wrong, I don't know if you were taught it, but I know I was. I was taught that the far more important writing from Plessy was Justice Harlan's dissent, and if you read it, it's hard to not agree with that. But these cases were presented as the wrong end of a counterbalance that has happened through the evolution of the courts. And so you talk about Plessy, yeah. And then you talk about Brown v. Board of Education. But like I said, and like you agree, I don't know how you teach law students now when nothing is sound, nothing is safe, nothing is. Everything is at sea. Everything is up for re-adjudication. And I do mean everything. Whose confirmation hearing was it where they abso-goddamn-lutely would not say that Brown versus Board of Education was decided correctly? You remember that? It's in the last century.
You mean recently, like it might have
been an appeals court confirmation. I can't recall, but I remember being on the air and talking about it, and the fact that if you can't just say that Brown versus Board of Education was decided fundamentally correctly, there's something wrong with you.
You brought up a great metaphor, you know, in terms of the axe, taking an axe, maybe that came from the man in the hole, you know what I'm saying? He was taking an axe to a tree. That is what, you know, you're right. The Supreme Court's not using a fine scalpel. They're hacking shit to bits. And it's like there is, and maybe this is going too far or not, but I don't know, but you know, I was taught like you about how things evolve. In a sense, you know, with human nature, talking about the various cases and then the corrective cases, sort of shows human evolution in their thinking, you know, enlightenment, that kind of thing. This has set us back so badly that it is causing, to me, must be causing havoc at the law school level. That's how bad the Supreme Court is. They're turning everything on its head. How on earth can anyone teach? I mean, it's gutting things, even on the basic teaching level of legal education. And, you know, there'll probably be some that eat it up and love it. But it's what republicanism, conservatism stands for is setting us back. I mean, it is anti-human evolution, you know, towards making us better, towards evolving. Everything that they freaking do. That's why it's great, you know, Dark Brandon there. I kept listening and re-listening to his speech there. Like the first of his campaign speeches leading to the midterms. I mean, it was wonderful to hear him calling them out and start warning and warning about the MAGA Republicans. There was one douchebag in the audience who started screaming that, you know, the 2020 election was stolen, the presidential election was stolen. I don't know if you heard that. They didn't make a big deal out of it, but he handled it beautifully. Almost as beautiful as Vice President Harris's suit, which was just gorgeous. I would call it a mauve. I'm like, oh my God, I'm blown away. That's her color, no question. But anyway, I digress. He just said, basically, you know, let him alone. Leave him alone, you know. And he used him as an example of, you know, just how ridiculous they are. And how they just are hanging on to this lie about what happened in 2020. So, anyway, that's one thing. The other thing is, I don't know about you, but I'm like trying not to get depressed about the meteorological end of summer. I don't know how you feel, but right now I'm sitting on the back deck here. It's a lovely evening. I've got three rabbits out here in the back with one of my pups sitting on the deck, and it's gorgeous, but I'm sort of noticing a few leaves turning here and there. We have a severe drought in Connecticut, so apparently the leaves are not going to turn as quickly. So we're supposed to we had one of the best summers ever, you know, minus the severe drought. All of our lawns are basically, you know, burnt. But I am saddened that, you know, that we're going into fall. I'm not a big fan of fall. And the other thing I'm not a big fan of is why on earth, I do not understand this. This is another thing I was talking about. Why did they make the kids start before Labor Day? Just make them start school after Labor Day weekend. I never understood that because they have like a couple of days and then they have a 3-day weekend. It's like, can't everybody just start fresh after Labor Day weekend? Let the kids have, you know, even college kids, let them have, you know.
Well, I have a kind of an answer to that.
That's just me. I knew you would. Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
You bust my bubble.
But no, see, the origins of being off for the summer for students lies in our agrarian past, where kids would need to be home to help with the planting and the gardening and the harvesting and the canning and the, you know, all the things that went with an agrarian lifestyle. And that's also where the idea of being able to quit school at 14 or 16 comes from, because there was a time when you would have the skills to be able to survive, you know, into as the next generation from what you had gotten, you know, at home. And, you know, hopefully you had a little bit of a foundation of reading, writing, arithmetic, whatever. But in the modern world, a lot of state governments went through these spasms of mandating at the state level and via legislation X number of educational days. Yeah. And it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how much quality there is. You've got to get those X number of days in, or, you know, your school board is in deep shit. And so, and yeah, so, okay. And so, if you're in a place, if you're in a place that gets hard winter weather, where school might be canceled a day or two here and there because of snow, then you start earlier to try to build in for those snow days. Because on the other end of it, you don't want to be letting school out in the third week of June. And if you get hit with a really nasty storm and you're out for a couple of weeks, then the day you get out of school gets pushed out further into warm weather. And, you know, by like May here, it's begun to get quite warm. And, you know, that's one of those areas where the reality of climate change is school systems are slow to catch up. I mean, when I started...
Well, we're set in our ways.
But when I started school, you know, first grade, there was no kindergarten for me. I'm so old, I fart dust. But when I started first grade... In Alabama, for God's sakes, Darlene, there was no air conditioning. And that's 1969. And yeah. Only like a year at, yeah. You know, like a year into did we get air conditioning. And they were window units. And there are still a lot of un-air conditioned schools that are now starting that once upon a time didn't need it. Because it wasn't that particularly miserable when they started school or when they finished. If they had heat, they were good. Well, that no longer obtains. And so you get... You see kids... I was driving home... let's see. My appointment with my surgeon was August the 1st. So 28 days ago. 4 weeks. And as I was driving home on... July the 31st, or driving to Tennessee on July the 31st, I saw a sign in a little community in South Central Tennessee, school starts Tuesday. So that would be August the 2nd.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't even have snow days. But if it does snow there, they're screwed because they don't have chains, they don't have salt, they don't have cinders, they don't have any way of... And if you've ever been in a snowstorm in the Deep South... It's Lord of the Flies on tires.
Yeah.
The
public school infrastructure is a disaster. I mean, that was, you know, that was brought to the forefront of people's awareness during COVID, because there's not even ways to purify or clean the air in these schools. Or even the AC. We still have this problem here in Connecticut. Apparently, I don't know what ranked us, but I guess Connecticut has the second best public schools in the country behind Massachusetts. So, even so, I feel like we're setting our ways, and you know, the kids, I'm sorry, but as far as I can tell, the kids are still getting out in the third week of June around here. And we've had mild winters. So, you know, the last couple of winters have been fairly mild. I don't know what's going to happen this winter. But it's just one of those things. It's that time of year. It's not my favorite time of year. And maybe because I'm like, I love summer so much. And I'm hating the whole thing, having to go back to school. Anyway, that was another thing. I don't know if you've expended your, that's what I thought. You know, I know it's like, there's 180 days here in Connecticut. You have to be in school 180 days. You got to start chipping away at that. But it just seems stupid to me, because then all of a sudden, you know, they've got a 3-day weekend with Labor Day weekend. To me, it just makes no sense to start after Labor Day weekend. But that's just me. Again, this country is very set in its ways. Norm Pattis.
Okay.
There's a headline. You Google that bastard, attorney Norm Pattis, attorney for the despised. That's the headline, okay? So he picked the perfect attorney. Okay, there's a story here in Connecticut. It has to do with wealth. Or there was a couple, a very wealthy couple, last name Dulos, lived in Westport, Greenwich area. This is a domestic violence situation. They had five children, five little kids. They were like, oh, I mean, she must have helped them out. Like, you know, as soon as she gave birth to one, another one, you know, she was pregnant again. So they get divorced. Silos Dulos is the husband. He, now, you know, ex-husband, he is a high-end real estate agent, sells high-end properties. Okay, so these are wealthy Westport, Greenwich types, big mansions. Jennifer Dulos, the wife, the mother of the five little kids, she came from a very wealthy family from New York. Her mother's name is Gloria Farber. So they get divorced. Jennifer and Silos, they get divorced. So Jennifer goes to drop off the five kids from school to school one morning. She goes to drop off the five kids at school. Comes home in her, you know, big SUV, and is then never seen again. Jennifer is missing to this day. Okay, the housekeeper comes in, and goes into the house, and I think she sees the car, the SUV parked in the garage. Goes in and starts doing the house cleaning, and she doesn't see Jennifer. So one of the things she noticed is that the day before, she had purchased a huge package of about 12 big rolls of hand towel paper. And she remembers filling up the hand towel paper roll in the kitchen. So she goes into the kitchen and starts cleaning and notices that it's empty. So, oh, that's odd. You know, so she goes into the storage to get more hand towel paper. Well, there's no hand towel paper. It's all gone. So she's like, God, what happened to the 12 rolls? You know? So then Jennifer doesn't show up to pick up the kids from school. So Jennifer must have had it arranged with her mother, Gloria, that, you know, that she is the backup in case there's something going on with the kids at school. The school calls Gloria Farber. It just sounds like an incredibly wealthy woman, Gloria Farber, and says, you know, Jennifer did not come to pick up the children today. We don't know where she is. We can't reach her. She's not. Gloria swoops in from New York, grabs those five kids, and is in New York. You never see those five kids. She's got them. Her mother knew. Her mother knew right away. It took the police, the state police, forever to arrest Silos Dulos. Okay? Silos was already seeing another woman. What the hell was her name? Takanis, I think her last name was. They were captured on camera in Hartford, dumping black garbage bags, huge black garbage bags, in poor and depressed neighborhoods. They were dumping all of these garbage bags. The police went to look at the garbage bags. It was all of Jennifer's clothing, bloodied clothing, in the garbage bags. So, and then it was beginning to make news. Where is this wealthy, it's intrigue, it's wealth. He had his own mansion in another part, I think in Greenwich. She had the mansion there in Westport. The kids are in New York, the little kids are in New York with the mother, and she ain't returning them because she knows he killed her. So guess who Philo Zulos hires for an attorney?
Something tells me I know.
You want to take a wild shot in the dark here?
would this be Lawyer Mattis?
Norm Pattis, yes. Hires him to represent him. Okay. So, still, and again, okay, if this situation revolved around a black couple in Hartford, it would have been, you know, it would have taken the state police no time at all to arrest the dude. And by the way, it did happen. Okay. They weren't wealthy, but that's a whole other thing. So, months would go by, weeks would go by. They still, to this day, they have not found Jennifer's body. They haven't found her body. Every time there's a dead body that they find up in this area, people wonder, is it Jennifer Dulos? Still have not found her body. So it took many, many, many months, but I guess they were able to get into the police. They were able, the investigators got in to the garage, and they had plenty of, high-end equipment where they were able to scan. They were able to scan that entire garage for blood. You know how they can use the ultraviolet light or whatever it is.
Right.
And they were able to discuss, they said that whatever happened in that garage when she drove in there, and again, you have all this hand towel paper missing. Okay. They said that there were still remnants of blood in that garage. They said that even though it had been wiped clean, it is clear that whatever happened to her, she had lost so much blood that there was no way she could have survived. Whatever happened there, she could not, she did not survive it. They were able to still find evidence that she had lost a massive, massive quantity of blood. So they arrested him finally, weeks and months later. And they also arrested an attorney who I went to law school with.
Oh, my.
A good friend. And there's a whole other, he was a good friend of Philo Zulos, and I went to law school with Kent Mowinney. And I'm looking and I'm like, I know that name. And the moment I saw the photo, I was like, oh, my God, I went to law school with him. He was in my class. He was a good friend of Philo Zulos. And, apparently, he was undergoing a divorce around the same time that Philos and Jennifer were, and Philos got involved and tried to strong arm his Kent's now ex-wife into staying with Kent. And she called the police and reported that I feel threatened by this Philos. Philos, he shouldn't be. He's involving himself. They arrested Kent. I haven't heard from. He was on his way crossing the Massachusetts border. And they arrested him. They think he was trying to abscond, to run away, because they think he helped. They think he helped Philo Zulos bury. That he knows where the body is buried. Okay. Now I haven't heard much. It's like he just sort of disappeared off the face of the earth at this point. But he was in Slammer the last that I heard. So when they finally decided to arrest this extremely wealthy person, and by the way, Gloria Farber, the mother of Jennifer Zulos, was in the middle of a lawsuit against Philo Zulos because I guess he screwed her over on some kind of a real estate deal. So she was suing him to recoup her loss. Finally, the state police decide to finally arrest Philo Zulos. So Norm Pattis is his attorney. They arrest Philo Zulos. They have, it was Greek, obviously, they have all female state troopers involved, and they make it a very public arrest. They wanted to make a statement. So it was all female state troopers that handcuffed him, that brought him to the police car, female drivers, all female state troopers. I know a retired female state trooper who said that the people in the Hartford neighborhood were pissed. They were pissed that this rich guy and his girlfriend dumped all of the bloody clothing in their depressed, you know, neighborhood. You know, multicultural, minority neighborhood, for lack of a better term, trying to pin it on a bunch of black people, you know, black and Hispanic people. They were pissed, but the cameras caught it. Philo Zulos is arraigned. They post multi-million dollar bond. He was able to post the bond. Posted bond and was free until the trial. Well, guess what he does to himself? He offs himself. He goes into his garage, gets in his car, and asphyxiates him. Leaves a note and says he's innocent. He's dead. Jennifer, dead. Leading up to that point, though, Norm Pattis, Attorney Pattis, came up with all these crazy, goddamn crazy theories before he was killed. Before he killed himself. Before his client killed himself, he said that Jennifer offed herself. Or that, Jennifer is in hiding. That's what he said. Jennifer is in hiding. She's in hiding because she, you know, she wants to win, you know, win in the divorce because I think they were separated. They hadn't completely divorced yet. So he came up with all these crazy theories that she was in hiding. She's actually still alive. And then he came up with that she killed herself in revenge. Okay?
Hold it. Revenge suicide?
Yeah, like a revenge suicide. But he first started off saying she's actually alive. She is, she's just hiding. She's in hiding. But when they found that there's no way she survived whatever happened to her, then it was like she killed herself. Okay. So do you understand why? Can you see why Alex Jones has selected him as an attorney?
Oh.
That's the connection I'm trying to make here.
More than I find it interesting. Okay. I find it interesting that he could negotiate his way through a brutal and bloody domestic murder, but he couldn't. But Alex Jones may be the one who does him in. Sorry to smoke. Yeah.
Let's hope.
25 times he took the fifth.
And guess what? He continued to push, and I think it was de-sticked by the court because the court said, okay, dude is dead. This is over and done. He tried to keep the case clean. He said, I won't give his name. He continued to push for a hearing, for a trial. He, even though he was dead as a doornail, he offed himself, right?
Okay.
He still tried to get the courts to, he wanted to litigate the case and clear his client's name.
Well, right, because trial, the billable hourly rate for a trial is... Yeah, and the billable hourly rate for a trial is huge.
Is the state? Right. So, it's a very sad story. Again, you're talking wealthy white woman, you know, and so they passed Jennifer's Law, or I think it's called Jennifer's Law here in Connecticut. I can't remember what it's about, because I haven't thought about it in a while until you mentioned Norm Pattis. And we all know that this happens every day. You know, we know people of color. We know it, you know, there was a woman who was killed. Okay. So this happened also. She didn't get any press because she wasn't as wealthy. This was up in East Hartford. It was a woman who, her husband killed her. I think she was a multiracial. They had a little child. Basically, she was worried because the husband was, he was doing something with fumes. It was like turpentine or something like that. And she was worried that it was going to make their hamster, their pet gerbil, sick. He killed her because she complained. Killed her. Okay? The little boy is alive. Thank goodness. He's a tiny little thing. Here's the button. They put erected a bench in her memory. My client and my former client was domestic violence field that I ran for many years. Wanted to acknowledge this case because you're talking about, you know, a multiracial couple versus a wealthy white couple who, and of course the latter got all of the attention in the news. And of course it took the police forever, you know, to arrest Mr. Doulos forever. I'm like, why the hell aren't they arresting this guy? Now the woman, the accomplice, she's in trouble, to Connors, but she claims that she had no idea she was not part of any murder. She believed him because clearly this guy seemed to have, you know, a hold on people. Like he completely, apparently fooled my classmate, who's a lawyer, you know, and she claims that he was very convincing and fooled her, that, you know, all she helped him with was dumping the bloody clothing, but she claims, I was fooled. You know, I was not part of any murder. So, like, she's trying to fight for her own survival in all of this. So that is, you know, that to me, with Norm Pattis being Alex Jones's attorney, man, does like attract like. And, you know, he was more or less put on the map because of the Doulos case. And when you see how he conducted himself with respect to the Doulos case, it's no surprise that Alex Jones selected Norm Pattis for his attorney. You can't get any sleazier. He's going to do what Alex Jones does. He's going to make up crazy fucking theories because that's what he does. He injects enough doubt into something.
Yeah, but the problem here, Darlene, as you well know, is this is not a criminal case where where a defense counsel has the luxury of arguing beyond a reasonable doubt. That's a very high standard.
That's a good point.
This is a civil case where all they have to prove is more likely than not. You know, 50.00000001% likely, and then it's Katie bar the door.
That's a great point. It's a civil. Right, you're right. It's a civil case. So it'll be interesting to see. I suggest you watch. You know, keep an eye out and see what Norm Pattis comes up with.
Well, it will be interesting. If he's not behind bars. Because remember, this was a show cause hearing. Or, you know, if he's still a lawyer.
Yeah.
And that would be highly unusual, but this is an Alex Jones joint. Anything is possible. But I gotta say, I mean, for as much weirdness as we point out in places like Alabama and, you know, Kentucky and God knows West Virginia and the like, y'all have some weirdness going on in the Nutmeg State.
We do.
And,
oh, yeah.
And by the way, Irish Dave asked, but do the public schools in the Nutmeg State offer lesbian dance theory classes? Everybody wants to know.
Rob's not, you know. We had a big controversy because they put the pride flag up, and somebody equated, some idiot here in my town equated the pride flag with the Nazi flag. And, if you could put a pride flag up, you'd have to put a fascist or Nazi flag up, okay? So now they had to take the flag down at the end of June, and it's going to be a referendum on whether or not you can put up flags that are for a quote unquote for a cause, a social cause. So I'm just like, you've got to be kidding me. And I am extremely concerned about how they're going to frame that referendum question. I'm very concerned.
Well, okay, so I've got something. I got something similar for you coming out of Texas. This is delightful. It's one of those moments when you get to watch some maggot or group of maggots hoist themselves on their own petard. The Texas legislature passed a law in the state that says if someone gives a school district a sign with the national motto on it, "In God We Trust," that and they are donated to the school district at no cost to the district, then the school district has to display the donated sign.
Because, you know, we want to make sure everybody knows that "In God We Trust" in the Busted Knuckle Independent School District in Texas.
Well, an outfit called Texas Bipartisan has had made signs that have the Texas flag flanking the American flag on the bottom. And in big letters, it says, "In God We Trust." You know, pretty lettering. Here's the thing, though. In one of the signs, the word "God" is spelled out in LGBTQ rainbow colors. And in the other sign, it's the pink, white, and blue of trans pride. And now, the Carroll County Independent School District will have to display those in Carroll County schools. Because the Texas legislature done said so. Isn't that beautiful?
That's fantastic.
But as I said, and you know, talking about school, y'all do have some weird going on. There's a guy named, and maybe this will be an "Oh my God" him moment too. There's a guy named Chris Taylor who used to be on the school board in, I think, the the Fairfield School District?
Mm-hmm. Fairfield, yeah.
Well, he just got busted August 13th in front of Fairfield Ludlow High School. He's been charged with third-degree assault and second-degree breach of the peace. He's out on $5,000 bond. He will be arraigned on October 11th. And he is alleged to have engaged in a road rage-fueled attack on a teenage boy. The thing is, he's still awaiting trial in Milford, in the Superior Court in Milford, because he impersonated a police officer in Seymour, Connecticut, and tried to kidnap his wife's 21-year-old son at gunpoint. According to the arrest warrant from 2019, Chris Taylor and his wife posed as police officers in an effort to get into a Seymour apartment building. Once inside, they went to the apartment of a 21-year-old man they're acquainted with and attempted to force the victim to go with them. The warrant said the man refused, and a fight ensued, during which the victim successfully fought the couple off, and they fled.
Now, sir, I have not heard this one, because it's further south.
I bet I know how he votes.
But, yeah. Well, we had closer to home in the Plymouth school. Okay, because that's big news up here. This man had been, this teacher had been sexually assaulting students for years, allegedly. Well, not only did they arrest him, but now they're going after all the teachers and school personnel
who did not do the mandated reporting. Interestingly, there are five of them that have been arrested. Okay, all of them are women. Women. I'm like, I wonder if this guy was a charmer or what. All of them are women. One turned herself in. Because, you know, it doesn't matter. It does not matter. With mandated reporting, it does not matter if you think that the guy did it or not. If a student approaches you and says, he touched me here, I think I've been assaulted, or I think, you know, I think he did something, you are obligated to report it. It does not matter whether or not you think the student is telling the truth. It doesn't matter if, you know, the alleged perpetrator is your buddy. It doesn't matter what you think. You are legally required to report the son of a bitch. To report, you know, not him, you know, to talk, well, to file the required report, okay, and to make a phone call. You have to do, it's very specific. Not one, not once, not twice, not three times or four times, but five times it failed. Five individuals.
Wow.
Knew he was doing this. Okay, so we're talking, you know, look, Connecticut's not immune, and let me tell you something, too. We would be a prize, just like New York would be a prize, just like California would be a prize, if they could flip it red. That would be a prize
for
these crazy fucks on the other side. You know, we had, okay, I thought the antihistamine was, you know, Themis Claridis, I thought she was bad. She probably would have been okay compared to what, you know, Trump still has a lot of power because he tapped, what is her name, Lori Levy? She was Trump endorsed, and she beat out, I think it was like three or four primary candidates on the Republican side to go up against Blumenthal. So that's going to be interesting. Ned Lamont, we couldn't ask for a better governor. Dude is fantastic. Okay, we have Bob Stefanowski running against him again. You know, and Ned almost lost to Bob Stefanowski. This is what's really scary. Well, first of all, the commercials are pissing me off because in the commercials, they're trying to say, you know, like Ned Lamont, Bob Stefanowski, supports a woman's right to choose. And then the commercial goes, and both, listen closely to what I'm saying, and see if you can catch what really pisses me off. And both of their lieutenant governors are also pro-choice. You see anything wrong with that statement?
There's only one lieutenant governor.
Exactly. Thank you. Exactly. Nobody's picking up on that. I'm like, excuse me? That's a totally Trumpian. Now, although Themis Claridis also, she came out as pro-choice. She supports a woman's right to choose on the Republican side. She caught shit big time from Republicans. How dare you be pro-choice? And they excoriated her, and then they suddenly got very quiet. Okay? Maybe that's because Lori Levy, they knew she was Trump-endorsed, she was going to win it. But do you think for one minute, that if somehow Bob Stefanowski becomes governor of the state of Connecticut, that he's going to keep that pro-choice attitude? Fuck no. You know as well as I do that the entire national Republican apparatus will come down to bear on Bob Stefanowski.
Oh, hell yeah.
To change his mind. Fuck yeah. And let me tell you something. He is not the brightest bulb in the box. He is dumb as fuck. He really is. I mean, he is so stupid. It's not even funny. There's just no comparison with Ned Lamont. He's not a very bright man. Bob Stefanowski is not a bright man. You know, and sadly, he almost beat Ned the last time they went up against him.
And you know what? Generally, intelligence is no longer lack of intelligence is no longer a disqualifier.
Exactly. So they got so quiet. Republicans got real quiet after they went after Themis Claridis
They got really quiet because I can't help but think that that's their game. They're going to basically, you know, okay, let them say that. Let them say that they're pro-choice, and let's see if they get elected. And once they're elected, we're going to get them to flip. We're going to get them to change their tune. They'll come. We can come up with something. And suddenly, Connecticut is no longer a pro-choice state. So,
it can happen in the wink of an eye, especially under the holding from Dobbs.
Exactly. You know, and my local representative, she's awesome, and she was running unopposed, and then some idiot last name DuPont. Now I don't know if there's any relation to DuPont, but this guy is. He's nuts. I listened to him speak just for a few minutes at one of my business circle meetings. And thankfully, the president of the business circle, who's a good friend of mine and also like very liberal-minded, there are a few of us in this town, she shut him down right away and said, well, this is not what we're here for today. We're here for this. And, you know, the legislators, we're having a candidates forum coming up, and that's what you say to people. She shut him down right away, thank goodness. But I'm like, this guy, he looks nuts. That's basically what we have on the Republican side. In any event, Connecticut's not immune. It's scary. And, you know, New York's got its politics, too.
Sure. I mean, Pennsylvania is not the only state that's Pittsburgh. It's the only state that's Pittsburgh in the West and Philly in the East and Alabama in the middle. There's a lot of northeastern states that are Alabama in the middle. I mean,
exactly.
I'm still disgusted with what we were talking about on Friday. The targeted attack, the targeted harassment, the targeted threats against Boston Children's Hospital, one of the finest children's hospitals in the entire United States.
Well, you know, not if you were there in the 1980s like I was.
Well, okay.
Oh, I hope it's come a long way. No, I would qualify that. Boston Children's Hospital was a fucking torture chamber, and it was not child-friendly. I'm going to go to the mat with anybody on that. I was there in the early 80s. I hope they've come along. It sounds like they've come along, but you'd have an awful lot of convincing to do with me on that floor because I experienced the Boston Children's Hospital firsthand, and they were not nice. They didn't know how to treat children. They fucked up my particular case 2 ways to Sunday. It was bad. They overdosed me. There were a lot of issues with Boston Children's Hospital, but again, that was, you know, many, many, many years ago. I'm dating myself here. But Massachusetts is a wild card. I mean, you know, they have a Republican governor. You know, there are plenty, you know, they can go Republican pretty quickly. We really don't know what could happen with this upcoming, you know, with the midterm. So it's still fairly kind of scary. But Massachusetts that's a dark horse, as far as I'm concerned. I think it's a little bit of a wild card. You never know with them. Rhode Island's pretty good. Rhode Island, they have really great, I mean, obviously fantastic senators, fantastic representatives. They're pretty good. As a sister state, I think Connecticut and Rhode Island are fairly solid. I can't see a situation where Blumenthal won't get reelected. I can't really see a situation where Ned Lamont won't get reelected. I mean, he did a fantastic job shepherding the state through the pandemic. And they're doing really good. I mean, they're like giving money. They're doing all kinds of things where, the child tax credit stuff. I mean, they're really, and he promotes it. So, you know, sales tax credits, things like that. They're really, really trying to help people out. So hopefully, fingers crossed, Connecticut will remain blue. I live in a very red area of the state, unfortunately, but it's a very ruralized, spread out, sparsely populated area. It's usually the cities that pull us through. So like in Connecticut, you'll see that red wave thing.
in the beginning, oftentimes with the elections, where it looks like Republicans are winning, but then boom, the cities are the last really to get their votes tallied and cast, and usually it's that's what saves us are the cities. They go Democratic, thank goodness. So.
And of course, but you still got your neighbor to the north, New Hampshire.
Oh yeah, they're another one.
And
for sure,
you know, that's New England's. If Maine is New England's answer to West Virginia, New Hampshire is New England's answer to Alabama.
Yeah.
And I know that's harsh, but you know.
It's harsh, but it's true.
Yeah. And by
Maine is.
And I was just going to tell you, by the way, big thanks to. Women standing. I had a note from Jude saying, honoring the connection with our Horn family, Asa, Billable, Brian, and my nephew Bill. They've filled my vessel with pure joy, and it's always a joy, and it's always a delight to hear from Darlene. Hey, Darlene, says Jude.
Hey, Jude.
And
well, tell her thank you. She sent me a pic. It was beautiful, the pic of her, Rick and his son Brian. It was a great pic.
Isn't it lovely?
I sent her thank you. Yeah, I'm so thrilled she shared that. It's very happy.
And you know, Jude said, each Horn caller provides their own unique perspective. My sense is the more we reach out to each other, the more solid our ground is secured, and we need grounding in these days. And that's absolutely the truth. And Bill Belrick just dropped a note. You'll get a kick out of this. Billable says, my son Brian and I, subject line, the Mini Horn Inn in Seattle, my son Brian and I thoroughly enjoyed hanging out with Jude, Asa, and Jude's nephew Bill on Saturday night in Seattle at the ballroom. Jude kindly brought some apartment warming supplies for Brian, like a broom, a dustpan, shower curtain, and so forth, which she gave to Brian after the dinner. Everyone made Brian feel at home in an unfamiliar city, and he now has friends in Seattle. On more than one occasion, Jude asked me if I felt uncomfortable meeting her, and I responded, of course not. How can anyone feel uncomfortable in the presence of the Earth Mother of the Horn? And Bill kindly gave me and Brian autographed copies of his book about the Fremont District of Seattle called 18 Windows into the Center of the Universe, which I partially devoured on my plane ride back to the OC. Jude is heavily featured in that book, as she lived in the Fremont area for 10-plus years. Fun fact, Jude and Bill met each other again for the first time in 52 years at a Deli General Store in Fremont. And Jude, isn't it sweet? And Jude generously treated everyone to drinks and dinner on Saturday night. We initially were going to order two pizzas for the five of us, but the waitress held her arms broadly apart to show that the pizza was 2 feet in diameter and that one pizza would be plenty for all of us. And damned if she wasn't right once she delivered the humongous pizza to our table. While we were eating, I anxiously waited for a pool table to open, and when one finally did, Asa and I then shot a game of pool, and Jude then played the next game with Asa against me and Brian, who soon lost interest. Anyway, a great time was had by all. Thanks again, Jude and Asa and Bill, and signed Billable Rick. That just sounds like a wonderful time.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah.
What a wonderful evening, and how generous of Jude to put the bill, that is so sweet, and isn't that nice?
Isn't it just lovely that people who would never have known each other, were it not for this community, are now you know? I mean, they now have a tangible, physical, corporeal connection to one another beyond the confines of this little electronic community. I just love it.
Yeah, and just and I know it's a little bit after 8, so I'll get going. I know you need to get going, but just in terms of Jude raising a great point about, you know, connecting with people. I mean, I'm on the other side of the country from them, you know, from Billable and Jude and Tracy and Chris, Sparky, Roger, etc. Mary Trump has she's got a new podcast, and I'm telling you, she and the people that she brings on her show, they sound just like her. And they come right out calling Trump MF-er everything. So she's got a podcast. You can
catch it on YouTube. And it's kind of interesting because they're from a whole different realm. You know, we don't really know much about or think about or talk to, and they're speaking our language. So we're not alone as a community. You know, we think about that in terms of John Bertico and his crew from Texas. But, you know, you're talking about somebody who knows the Trump family intimately, unfortunately. And, man, she wants to see the whole lot of them. You know, put in the slammer.
Yeah.
So
striped pajamas for everybody.
Yep. We're not alone. There are others out there that are saying the exact same things we are. You know, what does it take for this guy to be thrown in jail? His own niece, what does it take for Donnie to be thrown in jail? So I'd like to contribute. I can't. I am broke. I'm down to
Please, I get it. No, so don't apologize.
I'm waiting for money to come in, but I am broke. So it's just the way of things right now. So there you go. Otherwise, I'd throw out a challenge. But right now, I got to play it conservative right now. Did I say conservative? Oh, my God. I did. I said it conservative, yeah. Financially, so... But if you can support Robin's program, please do.
Thank you, Darlene. And Jude says, Darlene, yes, Mary Trump's podcasts. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so check it out because it was interesting. I'd love to see you on her program at some point. There's no reason why you shouldn't be. She had an emergency. She had an emergency radio program when the affidavit came out. So, you know, it's interesting, you know, that she's doing this, that she's kind of branching out. And I believe she's a member of the LGBTQIA+ community. So, you know, again, I'd love to see you on her program. You've been doing this for a long time. So I think it would be an honor for her to have you on her program. So I just wanted to alert you that she's doing something similar to you. She's speaking our language, so there you go.
All right, well,
anyway,
Darlene,
great conversation.
Oh, lovely conversation as
you
ever,
and I'm glad you
could educate us on the background of Mr. Took the Fifth 25 times, and the judge had never heard of that happening
Norm
before.
Norm Pattis. Yep, he is. Ponytail and all. He's a piece of work, so keep an eye out. It should be interesting.
Oh, you said ponytail, so now I have to go and look up the hippie lawyer. Hold on.
that's kind of a perfect description. Hippie lawyer. I think he has a ponytail. I think so does his sidekick, whoever that is. But yeah.
Oh yeah. Okay, I got you. Yeah, I see him there. Yeah.
Yeah, he's well known in Connecticut, so it's no surprise don't switch to him because he'll make peas in a pod.
I hope it doesn't hurt too little.
Yep.
You have a great night, Darlene.
Yeah. You too, Robin. Take care.
Stave off those coming autumnal blues.
I'll try. I mean, it's still beautiful out, so we've got a few. I'm going to enjoy these next week.
I know, but,
and,
you know, I'm...
You know, hopefully it'll drag out. It's tough.
I'm weird. You know, I start grieving on the summer solstice. I do. I really do, because that's when the days start shortening. Damn it.
Yeah, and it is dark right here now. It is where you are. It's dark, so it was
beautiful yesterday. Oh, it was breathtaking down here.
Yeah.
And the gorge was gorgeous.
We had very cold weather. Yeah, we had cold weather. It was chilly all day. It was like in the low 70s. Like, for me to be happy, it has to be low to mid 80s, no or little humidity. And it didn't, it really near the end of the day, it got beautiful, but most of the day was like, ugh, it was clammy and
Apparently, craptasticality is on the way tomorrow because it looks like thunderstorms all afternoon. Uh-huh. So who knows if we'll even have a program, you know, Appalachian Power being Appalachian Power.
Yep, I hear you.
All right, Darlene, have a great night, dear.
You too.
All right, bye. Bye-bye. What a wonderful conversation. My talks with Darlene always are. So thank you. To our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thank you to our a la carte contributors. Thank you so much. We find ourselves at 1945 to finish the month okay, fully funded. Thank you so much to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you. Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live, brand new fresh Malloy on the way at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. Remember, Tara and I will be filling in for Mike tomorrow through Monday. Hope you'll be around for that. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, at CRMW.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and now a proud union shop. Please support H.R. 2073, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act. It means the world to Appalachia, and it is indeed our best shot at having a future here. Please stay safe. Get your booster if you haven't already. Keep an eye out for the BA4.5 specific booster due out probably in the coming month. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Use your hand sanitizer. Don't not wear your mask when you're out among the very likely great unvaccinated, especially depending upon where you live. Maintain your social distance 15 to 20 feet, like Paul from Parts Unknown says. And, of course, if some... If some brunette waving her GED comes bounding towards you down the sidewalk yelling about lesbian dance theory class, do a quick step ball change and avoid that maggot woman like the plague, because she is. And always, Gina, it's all for you. Later.